Well, what it has to do with is maintaining stability in the Western Pacific and the Far East, which is an area that's been declared a vital interest to the United States going back multiple administrations, and also an area where we have commitments to important allies like Japan and Australia. And the concern is that for over a decade now, China's been engaged in a military buildup. And if you look at their military writings and so on, the purpose seems to be to shift the military balance to the point where they displace the United States as the predominant power in the region. And our allies are looking to us, and of course, the administration has been looking at this issue. It's been a focal point of President Obama's visit to the Western Pacific recently. And there's a strategic choice here. Do you sort of allow this to happen, to be displaced by another power, or do you decide that you're going to take countervailing measures to maintain the kind of stable military balance that has existed in the region, and also one that allows us to meet our commitments to our allies? And that's really the underpinning of air-sea battle, and the name indicates more or less the implications of the geography of the area, which really pertains to aerospace and maritime forces.
Before we talk about the potential budget implications of air-sea battle, I want to ask you about a little distinction that I noted in what you said. You mentioned that China wants to be the predominant power in the region. Do they see themselves differently, do you think, than we see them? Because I think most people see it kind of as a, in the United States, see it as kind of a U.S. versus China as superpowers in the whole world. Maybe Russia comes into that equation a little bit, but it's primarily the U.S. and China from our viewpoint at this point in time. Do they see it that way too?
Well, China now has the world's second largest economy behind our own. And again, it's tough to get inside the mind of the Chinese and understand exactly how they think. But you look at their capabilities as well as their intentions, and what their capabilities tell us is that they're building the kinds of forces that can target our forces at our forward bases in the region. They're testing missile systems that can target our aircraft carriers. They're building submarines that can make it difficult for us to operate in that area. And there's kind of, I think, a certain amount of confusion or surprise on our side, because after the Cold War, we really dominated in that area militarily, and we didn't try and coerce the Chinese, certainly didn't try and attack them. And the Chinese have really benefited as much or more than any country in that part of the world from the peace and stability that our military presence has provided. And yet, over the past decade, while we've been distracted by Afghanistan and Iraq, what we've seen is this persistent military buildup. And when you look at their military writings, they really are focused on the United States as their principal adversary. So they haven't come out and said it exactly, but if you look at the capabilities they're building and how their military is talking, it really does present us with what I think Secretary of Defense Panetta would call this strategic question that we must address. Are we going to be displaced, or are we going to counterbalance and maintain stability in the region? And if so, how are we going to do it? And the Air Force and Navy are saying, we've got an idea. It's called air-sea battle.
Now, you're right. If Panetta approves air-sea battle, the question is, how will it be implemented in an environment of fiscal austerity? I imagine part of the development process of this is a return on investment or some kind of a financial justification. Is that fair to say?
Well, absolutely. In a time frame where we're talking about roughly $260 billion in cuts to defense over the next 5 years, and maybe a lot more depending upon what the super committee does, you're going to have to make some very tough choices. And our think tank did a separate assessment that looked at just exactly what you'd have to cut elsewhere to protect the kinds of capabilities you would need to execute one version of an air-sea battle concept.
You mentioned in this piece, allies and partners, Australia, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan in particular, will have to contribute substantially more than they have in the recent past to preserve regional security. That's obviously a financial obligation that you're referring to there. Japan fiscally is really not in much better economic situation than we are. They haven't really ever seemingly recovered from the problems they had in the late 80s, early 90s. I'm not familiar enough about the economies in the other countries that you mentioned to speak about them. Are they in position to be able to help with this issue?
Well, let's just take take Japan as one example. Right now, Japan is spending about 1% of its GDP on defense. We spend about 5%. I've had a parade of Japanese come to visit me, military officials, government officials, saying, you know, what we want to know from the United States is what do they want us to do? How do we fit in to maintaining stability in the region? Because we don't want to waste the money that we are spending, and under certain circumstances, we might be able to boost our contribution because, again, 1% versus 5%. So it's not only a matter of doing more, it's a matter of buying the right kinds of equipment, positioning your forces in the right locations. So there are things you can do in terms of an overall effectiveness and efficiency perspective that wouldn't cost a lot of additional money. But that being said, we're going to have to ask our allies to do more. I don't think there's any question about that.
It sounds to me like you're saying these countries are looking to us for leadership and they're willing to follow us if we just tell them what we need them to do.
That's a very good point, Francis. Whether it's the Australians or the Singaporeans or the Taiwanese, the Japanese, they're looking at us and they're saying, we see the shift. You know, we live in this neighborhood. We see the shift in the balance. We see China becoming more aggressive. They're now claiming the South China Sea as a core interest, along with Taiwan, for example, which sort of indicates an expansionist mindset. And we're looking to the United States. Are you in the game or out? Are you going to counterbalance what the Chinese are doing? Can we continue to have confidence in you? And if so, how are you going to do it, number one? And number two, how can we help you?
Andrew, I'm out of time, but I appreciate you being on to talk about this, and I look forward to having you come back and continue the conversation.